Did they make contact?
No, I don't know. It's pretty close, but this is going to be a drag race. Right
look at there. This.
Moves him to win it. Carl Edwards bumping, dump and run.
Those are nudges. That's racing. Aggressive, but it's good. Good hard racing.
Oh,
he puts him out of the groove there.
Oh, man.
Here comes Gordon right up to the bumper again.
You hear that wheel spin, Ben?
Yeah, I did hear that wheel spin.
The bumper drive.
There it is.
Gordon underneath to the lead. Two laps to go.
Will he get the bumper? Yes, he does. Here comes Logano. Logano on the inside. A drag race. They're sideways.
Made a really turn around. Made a rally skate jump.
Yeah. Welcome to the Bump and Run podcast. I'm Michael D.Y., joined by my two best friends, Matt the Statman Riley and Daytona Ron. I hope you had a great weekend. I hope you had an Alex Bowman type of weekend. And I hope you had a big Mark Riley type weekend because he took it home in fantasy. He whooped us all in our fantasy league. Again, if you're enjoying the show, like, share, subscribe. Podcast available on all podcast platforms every Monday night. Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and more. And every Tuesday morning video available on YouTube. Shout out to all the friends of the show. Shout out to Matt's dad, Mark, the big winner in fantasy. And shout out to Alex Bowman. He pulled off the upset in Richmond. Did you guys see that one coming at all?
I literally didn't, Whitey. I literally did not see it coming.
I'll say this.
We'll get into that one later. I already know what you're alluding to.
Yeah, Eric, there's a reason why you didn't see it coming. I will say this. Yes, there was one person who did see it coming, and that is actually, speaking of friend of the shows, our buddy Justin. He texted me when Logano and Hamlin were duking it out, but before Harvick, you know, spun out and sent out the caution. He texted me and said, Bowman's coming. Bowman's coming. Yeah. I said, dude, he's like 14 seconds back in third place. And sure as shit, you know, the wreck happened with Harvick and Bowman led the last 10 laps and won it.
He's a huge Bowman fan too. So he was probably listening to the scanner, listening to the in-car radio. Definitely knew what was coming. I couldn't believe it personally. I wasn't surprised though that Bowman won. Just because last week he ran pretty well. I was going to play him in my fantasy team and I didn't. I swapped him out for Kyle Busch, which turned out to be an okay pick. We'll get into the race, but do you guys want to jump into some NASCAR news to kick it off?
Let's do it.
So we had a couple, just a couple quick updates. Bristol roof update. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. I believe it was during the off week. If you missed our discussion about Bristol and then putting a roof on, there's an update. They announced it, the idea is feasible, but it would cost an estimated $80 million to put some sort of tarping, a temporary roof above Bristol. Do you guys even think that would be worth it? You know,
no, it's an overreach.
Yeah, I agree.
And they're trying to fix something that happens everywhere, and it can't happen almost anywhere at any sporting event. Like especially there, any track you go to, there it's Mother Nature.
Yeah,
you can't. It's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. Like, don't try to fix something that. I mean, you can't say it's broken because it's Mother Nature. It could rain. It can't rain.
Yeah.
And you know, I just think $80 million just because, like, you had one shitty weekend of rain.
Yeah.
I mean, they got the race in. It's not like it was a complete disaster.
I thought it was great. We had to wait a couple of days, but we still had a great race and everything. And
that's just part of it, being a NASCAR fan. You know what they should do with that $80 million? Go ahead and fix up Rockingham, turn it into a dirt track like we talked about.
Well, I was going to mention they could take that $80 million and invest it in the Nashville Fairgrounds because – well, as we know, they've been petitioning the Fair Committee and the City Council to let NASCAR race at the legendary Nashville Fairgrounds. They were doing some meetings over the past week. The residents of Nashville got to weigh in on the possibility of NASCAR racing, and they said, well, there won't be any racing in 2022. That's already guaranteed. The earliest it would be 2023, and well, things are still developing. They're still in the works, if you will. I think $80 million, though, would be much better put back into Nashville's fairground raceway than putting a roof on Bristol.
That would be NASCAR's money, right? Like, that has nothing to do with, like, well, in or around Bristol.
It would be Marcus Smith's
money. So that's that's one of the NASCAR-owned tracks. Okay, because, like, I was thinking...
Well, no, so they don't own the fairgrounds. The city owns the fairgrounds. Right. Bristol Motor Speedway's group is in charge of trying to work out a deal or get it going.
Like, I was thinking, I mean, Matt and I were there when it poured, and... You guys saw what happened to the outside of that racetrack. How about not spend the whole $80 million? How about you fix the parking lot and in and around Bristol Motor Speedway?
Well
those people were, they're flooded. Like, that whole parking lot underwater, the camp, fix the campgrounds, give those people some, you know, money to do irrigation, that creek that ran through there, Matt. I mean, you know all about, like, where that flooded. And, like, I think maybe take some of that money and clean up the outside and make sure that doesn't flood. And worry about that.
Yeah, not a bad idea.
I'm sure the powers at Bristol and NASCAR, we'll see if they make the right decision on that one. Or they could spend $80 million. I think that'd be a big waste, but, you know. speaking of dollars and cents, Alex Bowman, of course, the big winner this past weekend, and it was announced today that he is in contract negotiations. Of course, he was in a one-year deal. To run the 48, the Ally car. I'm sure now that they have a win under their belt, negotiations will be running much smoother. It seems Hendrick, in my opinion, is looking towards the next generation. I mean, they have the youngest crop of drivers, I think, in all of Cup. I think the oldest driver is Kyle Larson, and he's 28 years old, something like that.
Yep.
And the first win for Ally is a sponsor in the 48 car. So, they've really been supporting Bowman. Glad to see. And hopefully they sign on for another year in 2022. Another piece of news. Last week, it was announced that Jennifer Jo Cobb, a veteran Truck Series driver, was going to be making her Cup Series debut at Talladega Super Speedway. And Matt, you said there was an update within the last hour or so. What's going on with Jennifer Jo Cobb?
Just before we started recording here on Monday night, NASCAR decided, I guess they looked at her resume, and I'll get into her resume a little later on in the show, but they pretty much said that she is not based on performance and quality of her resume. She does not qualify. She is not approved to run a Cup car on a super speedway. Okay. Essentially what it comes down to is, with these super speedway races, they're way too dangerous to have someone out there that's way underqualified. So they decided that it probably would have been a safety risk to have her out there. So she, I guess, you know, Rick Ware Racing is going to have to find someone in a quick manner here. And like I said, I won't get too much into it now because I do have something on that a little later on. But okay. That's pretty much where we're at right now as of 7:20 on Monday night.
Well, we'll update you on the Bump and Run Facebook page and at Bump and Run Pod on Twitter for any updates, especially when Rick Ware makes the formal announcement of who's going to replace Jennifer Jo Cobb. They only have, 6 days to find a replacement driver? I'm sure they will. That Rick Ware Racing stable seems to be, wide, to say the least. They have a whole bunch of people that I'm sure they could choose from. And like you said, we'll touch on that a little bit later. I know NASCAR does have some strict rules when it comes to, you know, like rookies, especially in the Truck Series, like younger people, you have to be a certain age to run super 18. Speedways and stuff like that. So, 'cause you could run a truck at 16 years old, if it's under, 2 miles, a track under 2 miles.
I think so. But as far as the Daytona and super Daytona and Talladega super speedways, you have to be 18 to run a race on those tracks.
And
like I said, it's a danger thing.
And like you said, Jennifer Jo Cobb's never driven in a Cup car. I would hate to see her go out on the biggest and the fastest track on the circuit and will wad up the field, which is very likely with any driver. Let alone someone with not a lot of experience behind a Cup car. Speaking of trucks, we had a pretty interesting truck race down in Richmond. John Hunter Nemechek, your big winner in dominating fashion, beat the big boss man, Kyle Busch, for the second time this season. How do you guys think Kyle Busch feels when he gets beaten by his own driver? because I'm sure he's happy, but at the same time, it's Kyle Busch. He hates to lose.
Well, he was in an interview after that race, and someone asked him that very question, and he responded in a way that, you know, typically I think the boss man would, where he's like, you know, I'm very proud of my driver. You know, I'm happy that, you know, I got this, you know, him and his crew chief together, and, you know, they're winning races. And, you know, John Hunter was asked about what he thought, you know, Kyle Busch's thoughts were on him beating him like that. Yeah. And he goes, I don't know if he's happy or not happy, but he goes, there were a couple times where he did give him the bumper a few times, like saying, hey, like, I'm here. But, like, you know, John Hunter said, he goes, I don't think he's going to wreck me to win the race.
No.
So there is a possibility in the back of my head that Kyle Busch would have won both those races. But he knew this is a young kid. This is his team. Don't go out there and outshow him. You know, as much as Kyle wants to win, I think he's done enough of that in the trucks. And I think he's kind of over that, especially, you know, since it's his teammate and it's his own team. So I think he is proud of him, and I think he is happy. But it still has to hurt him good not to, you know, get that checkered.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something about, you know, as you get old, as Kyle gets older now, you know, he probably is learning where the values are within having his own race team and seeing his guys perform and win races. You know, just go back to, you know, when Dale Sr. was still driving in the race that he passed away, he had his two cars that he owned with Dale Jr. and Mike Waltrip out in front of him, and he was kind of blocking those last few laps. So kind of taking care of his boys, wanting them to go succeed. And I just think, you know, that Kyle Busch probably has the same mentality now, wanting to see his guys do well. And I think that's the right choice. And I don't even think he was even laying off that much, because if you watch that last lap, when Kyle Busch was coming off of turn four, he damn near hit the wall. So he wasn't laying back. He was trying to get up there. But I just think John Hunter Nemechek just, you know, had the better day.
He bested the boss man. I was going to say kind of the same thing too. Like, I don't think Kyle Busch is ever one to give anyone extra leniency or room if he thinks he could win. Now, if it's a battle, he's
an excuse.
Yeah.
You think he's kind of like playing, I'm the boss man, I don't want to wreck him. Maybe he's struggling even in Cup. He's struggling, you know, every time he goes down into those trucks into Xfinity, he hasn't been dominant like he has been. So
maybe
he is struggling all around, and he's just maybe masking it as I'm being the good boss.
I wasn't thinking he was struggling. I just think he realized, like, well, I could wreck him and win, but that's dumb for the team overall. It's dumb for my driver with championship points and all that stuff. I was just thinking maybe instead of pushing John, because he's going to push him. He's going to push his driver to get better.
Sure he is.
So maybe he thought, like, okay, well, this might be a learning experience for John Hunter. I'm not going to back off. I'm going to give him the bumper. I'm going to let him know I'm here. I'm going to put the pressure on him
to see how he responds.
Yeah. Because if I was Kyle Busch in that situation, and I know, like, no, I'm probably not going to be able to get him, you know, I'm not going to push the issue too much, but I'm going to try to elevate him a little bit. If that makes sense. I don't know if that makes sense.
I agree 100%. Yeah.
Speaking of Jennifer Jo Cobb, this Richmond race, the truck race, was an absolute demolition derby, and Jennifer Jo Cobb intentionally wrecked Norm Benning after he spun her, making headlines for the second time this week. Well, really now the third time this week. And I kind of wonder, now NASCAR said that wreck had nothing to do with their decision not to let her in the truck race. But I mean, it's got to sway a little bit.
I believe them.
Yeah.
There's
a little bit of it. It had to reassure their decision. Mm-hmm. If it had anything to do with it.
Sure. This isn't the first time NASCAR has ever denied someone a super speedway race because of lack of resume. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't want to get, like I said, I don't want to get too far into it, because I'm going to give you some stats later on about Jennifer Jo Cobb. But
I have a point to make too later on when you get into it. That I don't want to jump into right now. Moving on
I will say this. I will say this real quick, though.
Yeah.
Real quick. So she had that little dust up with Norm Benning.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody want to guess how old Norm Benning is?
With the name Norm, I'm going to say 76. I'm going to say 76. I wouldn't
say 76. I know that they've both been around a long time. Norm Benning, I think, has been in the Truck Series since the beginning, like one of those Morgan Shepherd type guys who might have had a good career early on and just been sticking around. I'm going to guess that Norm Benning is...
He's looking it up.
I'm going to guess that Norm Benning I'm going to guess he's 57 years old, 64 the most.
Okay. Dovin was closer. Norm Benning is 69 years old.
Oh, yes, wow.
Let's go, Norm,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, and he looks every bit of it.
Oh, poor Norm. Storm and Norman Benning having a rough Saturday down in Richmond. I'll tell you who had a great Sunday in Richmond. That was Alex Bowman. Of course, he pulls off the upset with Denny Hamlin. Currently 13th in points, but I knew he was going to win eventually. I feel like Alex Bowman's one of those guys that's solid for one win a year and then a pretty okay playoff run. I feel like he hasn't really hit his stride yet. He's still, you know, getting his feet under him. Again, still a young guy. What'd you guys think about the Cup race on Sunday? Do you want to jump into the race grades?
Let's do it.
Yeah, I'm down.
All right, Matt, what was your grade?
All right, so the last 50 laps saved this race from getting a plain Jane C grade for me. Before the last like 50 laps or so, when mm-hmm. Denny and Joey were battling it out for the lead there, it was not a good race. It was not a bad race. It was just a very
average,
mundane, average race, like Richmond has tended to be over the past few years. Like I said, I you know, it wasn't awful. It was just, let's put it this way. There was better race. There was better racing in the middle of the pack and towards the back of the pack than there was up front.
There was really nothing that set it apart from any other.
We won't be talking about this race 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now. But what upgraded that C grade to for me was the last like 50 laps. Like I said, that battle with Joey and Denny, and then the out of nowhere caution that when Harvick blew his tire, and then Bowman, you know, pretty much stealing the show the last 10 laps, you know, diving down low on that restart inside of Denny and just taking over. I gave it a B because of that. And I don't, you know, I thought maybe a B plus because it was a fun last little bit of that race, but
it was a very exciting end to the race. But yeah, I'll agree with you. The first two stages, there wasn't really much to write home about.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there was actually a half hour, 45 minute period there where my eyes got heavy and I was actually even struggling to stay awake. But I won't take away, you know, like I said, the last 50 laps still part of the race, and that upgraded it to me to a B. So I think actually when we were texting, I think I said to you guys, you know, this race has been pretty average so far at the end of stage two. I said this race is either going to go to a D or an A. Let's see which way it goes here at the end. And it upgraded.
It trended upward. It was like a stock that was slowly dipping. And then people started buying it. It started to rise. And
But also
it never
this.
Made it to the moon, though.
I'll say this, and it's the reason why I love NASCAR so much, why it's my favorite sport, is because if you go see, you know, Alabama play North Texas and the score is 49-7 in the fourth quarter, you can leave. You can go beat traffic because you know that game is
going to happen. Yeah.
But with NASCAR, man, you thought with 20 laps to go, you thought sure as shit it was either going to be Hamlin or Logano that was going to win it. And out of nowhere at the end, here comes Bowman, a caution that we never saw coming, and he wins it. And so that's why they race every lap. And that's why I think NASCAR is the best sport going.
Absolutely. Eric, before you give your race score, I forgot to give the highlights. Of course, we had 5 cautions for 39 laps. That includes 1 competition caution, 2 stage breaks, 1 caution for Ryan Newman spinning, and 1 for Kevin Harvick had a catastrophic tire failure. Still not sure what exactly happened with that. Eric, what do you give this race grade?
Well, I just went with a plain old C. It's one of those races, where, like you were just saying, Matt, like how NASCAR, you know, you have those highs and you could have those lows where at the end, you never know who's going to win. That can either benefit you or you could get pissed off because that happens.
Yeah.
And to me, this race was a race where if you're a driver, or drivers were running well, you loved this race. But if your driver wasn't running well, you absolutely hated this race. And I was part of that because, to be honest with you, that first caution, it took the wind right out of my sails.
Yeah.
And like he just went down pit road and like he was holding out. He was one of the last like seven cars to go down pit road. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So you know how that is there, Richmond, have to battle back from a lap down. He ended up going two laps down. So right then and there, you know, like I said, the wind were out of my sails. I'm like, man, this is just a tough race, especially since the front of the field was just so just dominant. And you know, the middle of the pack was where the battles were. But my driver, you know, battling back from a lap down. And it just, to me, if your driver was running well, you loved it. And if not, you kind of struggled. But like you said, Matt, you know, at the end of that race, if you're just a fan of the sport, I think that is what makes NASCAR fun, you know, and that's what sparks these conversations and what allows us to have these, you know, these podcasts with these interesting conversations. So I'd have to agree with you on that too.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I'm giving it a C+. And again, my driver didn't have the greatest day. Another guy that got stuck two laps down to some green flag pit stops. And then of course that caution came out. I'm trying to find, Matt, do you have the race results? I'm trying to see how many cars were on the lead lap at the end of the day. I want to say it was only 10 or 11.
I know Eric Jones, he came in 19th and he did not, get back.
And I know Chase finished 12th and he was the last one on the lead lap, I want to say.
Yeah, it was a rough day for all of our drivers down in Richmond.
It was rough.
Like, real rough. I gave a C+. I was leaning towards a C minus. Really, the only saving grace of the race was that late caution that created some excitement with the ending there. And again, like I'm just going to give you my checkers right now. My checkers was the mid-pack battles, because that was the most interesting part of the day. And it was fun for a while watching my guy Tyler Reddick try to work his way up to the front. He started out near the front, kind of fell back after the second stage. And then, you know, things just didn't work out. There was some weird cautions at some weird times.
It just sucks, though, because I don't, like, when you know if Eric never goes those laps down, his car was getting better as the day went on. He was kind of figuring out, you know, the track and with the sun coming out and going back in. And that was throwing, you know, these crew chiefs for a loop too. And, you know, I think if he doesn't go that lap down, maybe he does come away with a top 15 or maybe, you know, even 12th place finish, because he was figuring his car out. But, you know, you get trapped that lap down early. It's tough to overcome, but you know, some drivers, they come right through that field.
And honestly, like, that is the thing about short track racing. You cannot make mistakes. You can't make mistakes on pit road. You get a penalty, you're going a lap down, except for Martin Truex Jr. He turned out all right. Matt, do you have those stats?
I think we interrupt this broadcast for exciting breaking news for us three.
Yeah.
As I was looking for that information on how many cars finished a lap down, I
found
that
it was the top 14. Brad Keselowski came in 14th. He was the last car to lead lap.
Okay. Well, this is kind of self-involved, this breaking news, but Dover Speedway permitted to host fans for race weekend. The reason why we couldn't get tickets this past weekend is because they weren't on sale yet. It says here that Dover International Speedway can accommodate guests who have already purchased tickets for the May 14th through 16th weekend, including the Dridyne 400 NASCAR Cup Series race on Sunday, May 16th. All ticket sales for this race will be paused starting today, so purchased seats can be reassigned for social distancing.
Okay.
So we've got to keep our eyes open.
Yeah,
sorry.
So pretty much like what they did with Pocono.
Yeah.
You know, like, I had my ticket from the previous year. So they were making sure how many of us who already had our ticket were still going to go. Yeah, so then they knew how many more tickets they could sell after the fact. So they were taking care of ticket holders. So I'm pumped about that. So hopefully
we've got it. We've got, I know this is pretty, like I said, self-involved here.
Still, We're breaking news.
Listening, we were all us three were planning on going to the Dover race to get back to the track for the first time since COVID happened, and we were excited about it. I looked into it before the weekend started, and I texted these guys that the tickets were not on sale anymore. That they were sold out. It said on the website, and now this news coming here. So it seems like there's still a chance, boys.
I'm very excited to hear that. We're breaking news on the Bump and Run podcast, and we do have a large listenership in the Mid-Atlantic region. So if you want to take the drive down to Dover, you'll have your opportunity to buy some tickets. Of course, like Matt said, they're figuring out the previous ticket owners, where they're going to put them, and I'm sure they'll have plenty left over after then to accommodate you if you want to go. Definitely looking forward to that. I'll be fully vaccinated by then. I know Matt got his second shot. And we should be a fun time back at track for the first time in over a year for us. And then looking forward to Pocono in June. I know, like you said, Eric, you already had your ticket set up. I have to get my camping ticket. I don't want to accidentally wait too long and then have it sell out. Because, again, I think it's, 50% capacity for Pocono. Getting back into talking about Richmond, though. You want to start our checkers and wreckers? I already gave you my checkers. It was those mid-pack battles. It really saved the race for me. It was interesting watching some of those guys try to fight their way back. Of course, once you go a couple laps down on a short track, it's kind of, your day is kind of done. I did enjoy Fox finally highlighting him a little bit, maybe because...
They listened to me? I think
they listened to you. So hopefully it's a good thing to come. Matt, you want to jump into your checkers and wreckers?
Yeah, let's do it. So my checkers goes to something that most fans could probably care less about. Understandably so, it doesn't really have any effect on us as fans.
Yeah.
But it's the manufacturers championship battle that's going on right now, which is exactly what it is. It's for those who don't know, there's the actual race championship, the main points battle that everyone pays attention to. Then you have the owner's points battle, and then you have the manufacturer's championship, which pretty much comes down to Chevy, Toyota, and Ford.
Yeah.
And it's a huge, huge, huge deal in the garage. Like, these guys really, really care about it, because at the end of the day, you know, if your manufacturer wins, that's bragging rights. And I'm sure there's a ton of other benefits that go along with it too.
Oh yeah.
And I just checked on it yesterday just cause I was curious. And right now, each manufacturer has 3 wins apiece. No one's been dominant, which, again, that parity that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And it's only separated by 3 points. Chevy has 325 manufacturer points right now, and then Ford and Toyota are tied at 322. So I think that's something interesting to watch. Like I said, it means a lot to the guys in the garage. Doesn't really have any real benefit to us fans, but it's, you know, if you're one of those guys that's a hardcore Chevy fan or a hardcore Ford fan, Ford fan, you know, it's that bragging rights that you get. So I just thought that was pretty neat. My records is going to Rick Ware.
Yeah.
And I know
let him have it.
I know it's going to sound like I'm dragging Jennifer Jo Cobb here, but I'm really not. I'm dragging Rick Ware. So as we alluded to, Rick Ware announced earlier this week that he pegged Jennifer Jo Cobb to drive one of his cars for the Cup race at Talladega,
which we
now know has been denied by NASCAR. But it got me thinking, like, Rick Ware is putting in a lot of guys in his car, guys and women that in his cars, his Cup cars, that to me don't deserve it.
Yeah.
I was just looking, you know, cause I was curious, and putting Jennifer Jo Cobb in the Cup car just made no sense to me. Her average finish in 31 Xfinity races is 32.7. Her average finish in 217 truck races is 25.4. And then I thought, well, maybe she's like sneaky good at plate races. So let me go ahead and dive into that a little bit. She's had 9 Talladega starts in the Camping World Truck Series with an average finish of 24.1. She's done nothing to deserve the opportunity, and Rick Ware continues to put these lesser drivers. I'm sorry if that sounds brutal, but
bonehead moves, you know, they're not there. I agree with you.
And NASCAR
back it up.
Yeah, NASCAR denying her the eligibility to run in Dega kind of backs up what I'm saying.
Yeah,
you know, like I said, it's not a Jennifer Jo Cobb thing for me. It's a Rick Ware thing to me, and he continues to just make bad decisions, and it seems like people within the industry, you know, from other podcasts that I listen to, kind of feel the same way about him. And I don't know the guy, but it seems like his business model isn't that great.
Can I tell you a little story about my first NASCAR experience at the Daytona 500 in 2019? So
let's hear it, boy.
So as most listeners might not know, I am a newer fan. I started watching in 2019. I watched when I was younger, as a little kid. It was wildly popular. I loved Days of Thunder. I loved playing with cars and stuff. So it appealed to me, but I didn't really follow the sport until 2019. And it was because Eric goes down to the Daytona 500 every year. It's cold in Pennsylvania. I wanted to go to Florida. I wanted some warmth in the middle of February. And so it was me and our buddy Kyle. We had tickets together. Eric was in his spot because he was a season ticket owner, and then our buddy Jay and Tom were in another spot. We all bought our tickets walking into the race literally that day, like walking through the parking lot. And so I have no clue about anything about NASCAR. I chose Austin Dillon as my driver because his car was gold, and I liked Dale Earnhardt when I was a kid. Number three just kind of made sense, right? And as you're watching, and when you're at the race at Daytona, I mean, it's just a giant pack comes flying by, and then they're gone. And then there would be one.
That's exactly how it is, though.
Yeah. And then there would be one car. It was the red Winn-Dixie 51, and it was Cody Ware, and he'd go about 15 or 20 seconds later. And me and Kyle would look at each other because we have no clue about NASCAR at this point. And we'd look at each other and go, why the fuck did they let that guy out on track? And then him and one of his teammates, I think, caused that huge car accident in the beginning of pit road. It destroyed Jimmy Johnson's tail end of his car. Yeah. I think they had a tape like his deck lid on. They could barely get gas into it because that was ripped apart. My guy now, Tyler Reddick, was making his Cup Series debut in the 31 car. He got fucking spun sideways, which is a really cool highlight to see. But here I am, like, I had no clue about anything. I'm like, why the fuck is the 51 driver? I just, like, his car didn't even sound good. Like,
oh,
it,
no. Tell, you can, like,
it, sound, yeah. It sounded like he was driving an old six cylinder, like an inline six Jeep from 1993. And I'm like, what is going on here? And as I became a fan of the sport over the last 2 years, I realized it's like, oh, it's Rick Ware. It's Rick Ware Racing. Like, he'll put anyone in his cars. They run like shit. He just collects whatever he budgets for last place every race, and whatever he gets. And I feel bad for some of the drivers of those cars. I feel like, I don't know if they're pay to play type deals or what, but I think they might be paying him to go out and run at least a portion, maybe just to get experience, maybe to get some exposure. And I wonder if Jennifer Jo Cobb is one of those situations, because I did hear an interview with Rick Ware last week when he did announce it, he was talking about what we talked about last week with his son Cody and their incidents at Martinsville, and then he announced, like, oh, we're putting Jennifer Jo Cobb. He said they've been trying to do this for a couple of years, and I wonder, Matt, you said that NASCAR did approve her a couple of years ago, but it if you don't race within a year, you have to reapply to race in the Cup Series again. And I wonder if they tried to do it a couple of years ago, the funding wasn't there, and then this whole drama with his son and everything popped up, and they're like, oh, well, Jennifer Jo, you want to ride a Cup car at Talladega? That's what I'm thinking might have happened with this whole situation.
Yeah.
Notes for Jennifer Jo Cobb. I have Jennifer Jo Cobb here, and all it literally says is Rick Ware should just pack it up. That's what I have.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll be honest with you guys. I know this is partially my fault because this was my records, but we have spent too much time talking about Jennifer Jo Cobb here.
All right. One more point though. I wanted to make it earlier. At the Daytona 500, David Cope, I think he was the oldest driver in the Cup Series since he had a very poor performance at Daytona. And I wonder if NASCAR looked at that and they're looking at Jennifer Jo Cobb and they're like, all right, well, we can't make that mistake again at a super speedway.
Matt nailed it. It's all safety and safety is going to win every time.
All right. Eric, what's your checkers and wreckers?
My checkers, you know, I don't know if I gave any race winner to the checkers this year, so I'm giving it to Alex Bowman.
Okay, very deserving. You
know, the type of race that he had, you know, he actually had a penalty that he had to overcome from as well. He was battling, at one point, an absolutely terrible car.
Yeah.
You know, he said he drives Richmond terrible. Like, his crew chief, like he said, has such a hard time setting up his car because Bowman dives in. He goes in way too deep and, yeah, you know, rolls. He lets off the gas almost completely through center, likes to roll it, and then gets that drive off. But it's just a weird line that he takes, and he admitted that.
Yeah, he self-admitted he does not know how to drive Richmond at all.
Yeah, but for some reason, his crew chief, he said, gave him a car where that line actually worked for him. So. Yeah. You know, he overcame
Greg Ives, man. That's a good crew chief figuring it out for his driver.
Mm-hmm. So I got to give it to Alex Bowman. You know, he overcame some issues, and you know, I touched on him a couple weeks ago too. And you know, when I was talking about Willie B and Byron and Hendrick, when I gave them the praise that they deserved, and they still deserve now. I still think they are the top team.
Yeah.
You know, as far as the season goes, but Bowman, I've always been impressed with him. And like, I don't know if Matt remembers this, when Junior was retiring and Bowman was taking over the 88 car, I was a big advocate for Matt to be a Bowman fan. I thought he had a lot of potential back then. I saw something in him. Like, he was always a team player. You know, he was the sim driver over there at Hendrick, you know, before, you know, any deals came into place. And, you know, I think it was Moody today touched on it, where, how about him? Like, hey, you want to be our sim driver? Yes, sure. Yeah. Did that. And then how about taking over the 88 car for Dale Earnhardt Jr.?
Legendary.
Yes, boss. I got it.
Yeah.
Went out, won a race, went to the playoffs. Oh, how about taking over the 48 for 7-time champion Jimmy Johnson?
Another legendary.
Okay, boss. Goes out there and wins a race, and he's locked himself into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So, yep. I mean, I think he deserves praise. I think Willie B deserves the praise. And, you know, I think it's our kind of opportunity, and not our responsibility, but like, some of these older fans that might not follow these younger drivers and pay attention to them as much as, you know, you or I might, being, you know, newer into the sport and following these young guys up and, you know, having to pick a new young driver. I just think it's time for them to shine, and you're going to see them, you know, getting a lot more headlines in the future. So my wrecker, though, I wrecked myself this week because, as I stated in the beginning of the show, I did not see it coming, the Alex Bowman win, because I was sleeping. I was watching the race. And I'm like, man, you know what? I'm going to roll over and I'm going to like turn the volume up and, you know, let's listen to it as I'm laying here relaxing. And, you know, I had a hockey game later on that night trying to get my rest in. Race was kind of going as it was going from the green flag. So, I'm laying there and I'm listening to it. And, you know, about 90 laps to go, I think I conked out and ended up waking up and hearing, you know, the interviews from pit road after the race. And I'm going, no, like,
what
you
the
didn't.
Hell happened?
No. Oh, yeah. My, what happened? And, so yeah, I'm going to wreck myself for missing the legitimate best part of the race. I stayed up for the worst part, watched the terrible 3/4 of the race. And when the action happened, my eyeballs were nowhere to be found.
I'm going to give you a pro tip. If you have a DVR and you're watching the race, you want to take a nap. Here's what you do. You just hit pause. Because it has like a half hour pause, you turn the volume real, real high so it's silent, you're paused. After the half hour hits, it automatically starts the race again. And you jolt yourself up because the loud volume wakes you up. That's what I do. If I'm feeling a little sleepy, the race is getting a little boring, I'll just hit pause on the DVR, take a little 20-minute snoozer, and wake up to see the rest. And then you get to fast forward through all the commercials. By the time the race is over, you've caught up. You're back on the lead lap, and then you miss none of the action. You just can't go on social media in between. You'll get spoiled.
Yo, speaking of that, this is irrelevant, but for the Bristol playoff race, like, I have already a plan in place for myself. I have to go to a wedding that night.
Oh yeah. Cause it's a
Saturday night race. It's a cutoff race in the playoffs, and it's my favorite race of the year, the Bristol night race.
Yeah.
So I told Steph, I'm going to shut my phone off, because if you don't shut your phone off, like, you can't avoid it. You're going to find out, whether it's through, you know, text from you guys, text from my dad, Twitter alerts. I'm going to find out what happened through the race. And I don't want that. Like, I want to go in completely fresh. So I'm going to literally shut my phone off from the time the race starts until I get back to my apartment on Sunday. And I'm just going to watch the whole thing.
Dude, I've been there because I watch on an app or on my phone. A lot of times I stream the races. So
you're a couple minutes behind, yeah.
And dude, like, some of those text groups we used to be in and stuff, like, I wouldn't respond in them because, like, I didn't want to read what was going on because I wasn't seeing it. So I'm like, I would put my phone down. But I don't, Matt, you might have been at that concert a few years ago. I remember I was at a Lynyrd Skynyrd concert and I was watching the Bristol race on my phone.
Dude, yeah, you have to. Well, I was already told, I was already given strict instructions that I was not to be buried in my phone during the wedding. So I can't do that. I got to be present. I got to be out there cutting up.
I feel your pain. I feel it. Like, you know, when you have to have your eyes on that race, I mean, oof, that's a rough one, Matt.
It's going to be one of those things where it's like, Matt, why were you in the bathroom for an hour and 45 minutes?
Oh, yeah.
I just had to go.
Well, a couple years ago at our buddy Gallagher's wedding, we were watching the Xfinity Series championship race in the back room and stuff. And then me and Eric, I had it on my phone. Me and Eric were watching it at the table. I watched Tyler Reddick win an Xfinity Series championship.
And Christopher Bell, yeah.
As Gallagher and his wife were walking down into the reception and dancing and having a good time. So
got to do what you got to do sometimes. Hey,
it made the wedding that much better because it was a cause for celebration for me there.
That's
too.
Right.
Let me jump into my checkers. I already told you the mid-pack battles for my checkers, and Fox finally showing a little bit of that. My wreckers for the week is Brad Keselowski not pitting. I like a gamble. I like an off-sequence pitting strategy. I think at a certain point, though, they should have pulled the ripcord, brought him in as quick as possible before that no point of return. And listen to Larry McReynolds McNuggets. He told you it wasn't going to be a caution-heavy race, and it definitely wasn't. I don't know what they saw out there that they were willing to gamble like that, but the gamble did not pay off. Now, here's the thing. If the gamble paid off and Brad Keselowski won yesterday, it probably would have got my checkers. So you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Some other highlights we touched on, of course, Kevin Harvick's bad luck. He was running really well all day long yesterday. Bounced out of the top 10 for a while, worked his way back up. It seemed like he was going to have a good finish, and then just catastrophic tire failure. Everyone said it had to be like a tire bead that blue or something.
Mm-hmm.
Still not exactly sure what happened with that. Eric Almirola finally having a good day, though.
He almost won the race. He was in position to win the race, at least.
I feel like they swapped luck this week. And hopefully, maybe, who knows, Eric Almirola, pretty decent plate track driver. He was in contention to win Talladega last year, too, before he was taken out near the end there. So who knows, maybe... maybe Stuart Haas, I don't want to say the tides are going to turn for Eric Almirola, but you never know, some glimmers of hope here and there, and another bad day for Kevin Harvick. Another bad day, like we mentioned, our guys, none of them really did well. Chase Elliott, where are you? The only Hendrick Motorsports driver not to win a race so far. I'm not getting worried.
Shocking.
I think his win is coming any day.
He did an interview on the pre-race there with Boyer and Gordon and Chris Myers there. And he said, like, for whatever reason, Richmond is not his track. Yeah. Like, it's, I wasn't expecting anything out of him.
No.
And he just seems to heat up in the summertime. So I'm hoping that happens.
Yeah.
I mean, all three of his teammates have won a race. So it's not like, you know, and he's been in contention for a couple of the races as well.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's been riding around back there in the teens and in the 20s. Like, his time's coming. I'm not nervous at all as a Chase fan.
Yeah.
It's just yesterday did suck watching him run around pretty much in 15th the whole damn race.
I mean, in the back of my head, I'm just saying, like, look at last season. He had such bad luck in the beginning of season with just not being able to finish races, usually due to no fault of his own. So I think, like you said, Chase is going to heat up in the summertime, maybe even at Talladega. I mean, he hasn't won at Talladega in 2019, so I'm not too worried about him there. I think the win is coming for Chase. Hendrick Motorsports, I feel like it's Hendrick and Penske are the two most dominant teams. And then, you know, half of Gibbs. I mean, Christopher Bell's shown a lot of good speed and everything. I think he'll probably win another race before the day is done. Are you guys getting worried about Denny at all not winning a race?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No. Well, see, this is the thing. I was going to touch on that a little bit because someone was asking, you know, what's Denny's, morale like? Because, you know, he's getting all these second, you know, like he's third, running so third, well. Yeah. And, you know, at a certain point, you're like, well, he's leading in points. You know, he doesn't have the win, but you're the most consistent. You're, you know, running in that top three consistently. But if you're still not getting the win and your teammates are getting the win, and this is where the thing with Chase came into play with me was, yeah, I think Denny's attitude was a little different after this race than it was a few weeks ago. So
he did seem a bit deflated.
Yeah. If he continues getting these top two, top three runs and his teammates keep winning. And that's what I'm seeing maybe from the Hendrick camp. If Elliott's close, but his teammates are winning, there might be a little bit of a little worry there. I agree with you guys. I think the win will come, but there was the Kyle Busch incident where Kyle Busch didn't win for a long time, and you know, he was close in a couple of those as well. And like, you never know. It's such a weird season. It's such a interesting season that I just think Chase is such a calm kid that I think he looks calm at all times, and it's hard to read him and get a feel for if he is, you know, worried or not worried. I mean, Matt, would you agree with that? Like, he's very,
his man, biggest, you know, his biggest critic is himself. Like, he doesn't seem to be bothered by any of the outside noise, which is what, like, you look at any superstar in any sport, you know, that's a defining trait with most of them. Yeah. You don't get bothered by the outside noise. You know, you are your biggest critic and that's it. You don't let the little stuff worry you. So I'm not worried about him. And I think even more so, I mean, you made some really good points with Denny as far as, you know, possibly getting down on himself. But when you are running, especially in NASCAR, when you are running as consistent as he is second, third, fourth, all the time, the win will absolutely come. And then once it does, we've alluded to this in other episodes. Once it does for him, he's going to bust out and he's going to start, you'll see him going on a run, you know, maybe I could see him doing, you know, one of those things where he's winning, you know, 3 out of 5 or, you know, 4 out of 8 races or something crazy like that. So I'm not worried about Denny at all. He'll figure it out. He'll be good. You know, he might get two wins in one weekend at Pocono. So
that's,
you never
very
know.
True. Yeah. I just had a crazy thought though. So right now, Denny Hamlin's in first place. He's 81 points above Martin Truex Jr. in second. And because
who has two wins.
Right.
And so here's where I'm going with this. So because it's been such an odd season so far in the beginning, could we see,
oh no, don't say it. Don't
could
say
we
it.
See Denny no. Hamlin go no. winless into the playoffs and still win a championship? I mean,
did you steal my tinfoil hat? Did you?
I think I did. Okay. Could you?
I think you stole my hat.
Could you?
I thought you were going somewhere else with that. I thought you were going to say, are we going to see 16 winners and see Denny Hamlin not even make the playoffs?
No, I don't think that's going to happen. I was just wondering, like, what if Denny points his way in first place without a win? Could you imagine that?
I could totally see it. I could totally see it happening with how many different drivers have already won. You know, like we talked about, there was 26 races between four drivers. I forget the four. Denny Harvick was one of them, but there was 26 races.
It was Denny Harvick, Brad Keselowski.
They didn't win. Yeah. So like there's so many opportunities left out on the table. And, you know, it's so hard to tell because no one's going to get to that 9 mark. No one's going to get to that 7 mark again. I don't think that's going to happen. Right, so those wins are going to go somewhere else. And I think Denny is going to get more than two. I agree with Matt. I think come the summer, end of the season, he's going to heat up and he's going to put a couple of them down.
Right now, we're 9 races in. We have 8 different winners. Martin Truex Jr., the only 2-time winner this season. I'm just saying, a couple years ago, we had a Truck Series championship won by someone who didn't win a race. So, you know, crazier things have happened.
Matty Crafton, right?
Yeah, it is. I would love it for just the storyline alone. And I feel like every single NASCAR fan's mind would melt. But you want to what? You know who wouldn't be able to complain for once? Is all those, the playoffs need to go, people. The people that want points to count only. Because, you know, if Denny won a championship without winning a race, you can't get much more points counting than that. Anything else really stand out to you this weekend at Richmond? I didn't have a whole lot for notes.
No, the only thing I want to say is there's one player in NASCAR that we only seem to talk about when that player does something negative to our sport. And I'm going to talk about that player right now because it was positive this week. And I'm going to talk about Mother Nature. She did not rain on our parade. We only talk about her when she ruins our weekend. Yeah. I almost gave her my checkers for the week. I'm going to give her a little round of applause because, we need to talk about her. Thank you, Mother Nature, for finally not giving us any issues. And we had a whole weekend without even a threat. So that was good to see.
Thank you, Mother Nature, for complying this
100%.
Week. And let's hope the streak continues and we see some nice sunny weekends from here on out, especially for us at Pocono.
You know what, Whitey? Actually, before we move on, your Brad Keselowski his pitch strategy kind of had me thinking, and it had me thinking because, you know, I used to get frustrated as a fan, even back in the Kenseth days when, you know, my crew chief wasn't aggressive. And when they just went with the field, they didn't try anything out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
I would always say like, hey, we know we're not going to win this race. That crew chief knows at a certain point, like we don't have the car to do it. So I would be like, why not go for these stage points and these, like basically what Denny has done up to this point is what I would kind of like Eric Jones and that team, even when he was with the 20, like I always knew when
try he something had a outside car, the box,
try something else. Cause like I would get frustrated knowing that like he's on that cutoff and you're going to miss it by like a couple points.
Yeah.
When instead of going for that win and like, going with the flow and coming in 15th or coming in 20th.
Yeah.
Why not gamble at end of one of those stages and come away with, I don't think Eric Jones has any stage wins in his career. Like, it blows my mind that you don't go that route. Sometimes I understand winning you're in, but look at Denny. And if you're one of these teams that
maximize points, you know,
right. Maybe, you know, you're winning is a long shot, but there's still that possibility. Would you guys rather the go all in or like, would you rather, you know, collect points at certain races when you know, like some of these top three guys, like the Truex and Denny's, are just going to dominate?
Yeah.
Why not get points?
I know my answer is not sexy, but I think you have to find a balance. You know what I mean? If I try to put myself in that position, if I was a driver, what would I want in a crew chief?
Yeah.
And I would want somebody to be aggressive for me, make the right calls, be aggressive. But on the other hand, like, it also depends on where am I in the points, you know, am I sitting in a position where I can kind of afford to make some gambles or not, you know? So it all depends. It kind of depends on where I'm sitting in the points and what I would want.
Like, okay, put yourself in the 43 shoes. You know what I mean? Like, you know, your average finish over the last couple of years was like at 23, 24, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
So if that's, you know, you're going to end up. And, you know, that's far, far away from winning a race. So, like, I just think if you're that team, I mean, which is my team.
Be aggressive. Be aggressive.
Try to win a stage. Try to get try to do something fuck wild. You're not going to win anyway, pretty much. You know that. So do something crazy. That's why, I kind of respected the move by Keselowski and his crew chief. Like, Larson's crew chief, I forget who it was back there when he was with the 42, but he used to do the most fuck wild things.
Yeah.
And a lot of times he made it work.
Oh,
and
we're
like, oh my God, Larson has a shot to do this. Like, this strategy was wild. And I'm like, damn, I got so jealous of some of these crew chiefs going for it. But I feel like now, you see a lot more of them just going in line, you know, with what everyone else is doing. And I just would like to see some stage wins and stage points instead of just running around, you know?
I mean, I'm going to contradict myself because it was my records, but I totally agree with pretty much everything you said. I love when a crew chief gambles, and there's nothing I love more than a good fuel mileage run. I love the, especially when when NBC calls it and Steve Letarte starts talking about fuel mileage and everything. Like, that is so exciting to me. And one of my favorite things, and it's why I have such faith in Tyler Reddick and his crew chief Randall Burnett, is if you go back to the Xfinity Series 2019 season, the second Las Vegas race, it was the regular season championship race. Mm-hmm. Tyler Reddick did not have a car to win. Christopher Bell was out front all day long. He had a car that could not be beat. They pitted early and they fucking ran out. Like, they were so close to running out of gas at the end. Like, Reddick was backing up. Like, they were having him just test out a couple laps, give us your hard laps, see where you're at, back up. And you watch, it was so fun to watch Christopher Bell kind of come from behind and just barely get close to Reddick before the finish line. Like, I love when the gamble pays off, but it's so easy when the gamble doesn't pay off to talk shit. And that's all I'm doing this week with Brad Keselowski.
I think that was a bonehead move at that racetrack. You know what I mean?
I think there's
generalizing a season and where you know you're gonna have a car or not,
I think that I like you said, there's times to gamble and times to not. Vegas in the Xfinity Series 2019 season was a great time. I've watched that race at least 4 or 5 times. I love it. I suggest you go on YouTube and watch it. It's fantastic.
Eric, that crew chief for Kyle Larson was Chad Johnston.
Yes.
You know why I think we love fuel mileage races so much, boys? It's because we're Pocono boys.
I saw Ken Smith win there on a fuel mileage race. I mean, it was one of my, most fond NASCAR experiences as a fan to see my driver win at my home track, and it was a fuel mileage beating Kyle Busch.
How many times has Brad Keselowski gotten really close to winning or won a Pocono race because of some weird pit strategy stuff?
I got to see Junior win a Pocono race because Brad ran out of fuel right in front of us. On the bat when we were camping out in turn one, there happened right in front of us. I have a great picture of that too. Yeah,
that's why
it was amazing. Junior made the pass, Brad, with a lap or two to go, directly in front of us, and I was going crazy. And
that reminded me of something I saw. I follow a whole bunch of NASCAR pages on Instagram, and they're always doing polls in their stories and whatnot. And someone was running a poll, which is the worst track on the schedule. Pocono or Richmond? And of course, I voted Richmond. I can't say anything bad about Pocono. We live in Pennsylvania.
Ever since the repave, it's great racing.
That's the thing. I don't understand the hate for Pocono because so many people complain about cookie cutter, mile and a half tracks. You have one of the most unique tracks in Pocono. I think it's the most unique track in my mind. I think it puts on great racing. I look at Pocono more as a road course. And people love road course racing, so I don't understand why people don't embrace Pocono more. I get maybe on TV it's not the most exciting race, but I mean, a lot of road courses aren't the most exciting races on TV. Look at Sonoma. I usually skip Sonoma every year because it's a snooze fest, so I never understood the hate for Pocono.
Yeah, shout out Pocono. Deserves a lot more love than it gets. I agree.
You want to give me a second? Hold on. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll see what I'm doing. I'm putting on my Pocono hat. If you're listening at home on the podcast, I got to represent Pocono Raceway for the rest of this. I got my Vanscoy Diamond Mine 500 hat on. Yeah, I can't wait for Pocono in June. And if you hate Pocono, well, I'm not going to say don't listen, but, you know. I'll never turn
if you hate Pocono,
get some tickets to show up is what you have to do.
Yeah.
I'll say this. If you hate Pocono, you come to Pocono with us. You'll leave that weekend loving Pocono.
You'll change real quick when it comes to Pocono. I think that's pretty much all I had for the Richmond race this week. MTJ still on fire at the short tracks. He didn't pull off the win, but great finishing position. We have a lot of road courses coming up. I feel like he's going to be the one this year to get multiple wins. And I think right now we're kind of seeing who the cream of the crop is rising to the top. I mean, the last couple of weeks, it's been all the same players. It's been MTJ, Denny, Joey Logano has been in the mix. Even Alex Bowman was in the mix last week, so it was no shock to me that he won this week. Kyle Larson at the mile and a half, so I think he's going to start to come back towards the front again very soon. One person that was
nowhere. We alluded, though, the road course is Chase. Before, this is where, like, you know, I think Matt is kind of excited for these next few weeks coming, because Chase could easily, just as you said, MTJ, I'm kind of swinging more on that nine car. I think that car has a little bit better of an opportunity to sweep some of those road courses.
And you know what? Chase went on a real long winning streak, but I think really any of the younger guys in the field have a good shot at some of these road courses coming up. It just seems like the younger guys are so much more well-rounded when it comes to racing. I mean, of course, Martin Truex Jr., not a young guy by any means. He's a veteran and all, but before him, like, I mean, it's him and Chase, and then it's anyone's game after that.
Those road courses are better, and why I enjoy them more is because of that well-roundedness of these new group of drivers coming into our sport. It's enhanced these road course races to the point where they're watchable and they're absolutely entertaining.
Yeah.
All right. So that pretty much ends the Richmond weekend in terms of who did well, who did okay. And well, let's get into who did the worst. Of course, every NASCAR podcast analyst talks about the person that came in first. Here on the Bump and Run podcast, we like to talk about who came in last. This week in Richmond, the last place driver was one Justin Haley, running part-time for Spire in that 77 car. They had an engine expire. Now, I'm not exactly sure what happened. I couldn't find any information on it. He turned one lap, according to the report, and then he was out with an engine. So I don't know if it blew on the first lap or what. He does have one cup win under his belt. He won under red flag rain conditions in Daytona in 2019. Fun fact, that was my 31st birthday. Austin Dillon was leading for a while there. He was my number one in 2019, and I thought I was going to get an Austin Dillon win for my birthday, and of course I didn't. I got a Justin Haley win, and he but on the bright side, I did get a great Italian grinder hoagie from DeMiro's, and I'm pretty sure Eric paid for that one since it was my birthday. We had a good old time hanging out at our buddy Kevin's house on the back deck watching the race. And Justin Haley, he's mostly known for the Xfinity Series racing. He actually had a cup win before he had an Xfinity Series win. His first Xfinity Series win happened at Talladega in 2020. And that's who came in last. You guys have anything to add to the last place driver this week?
Just one thing I heard, it was when he shifted into third. That's when it all went to shit. Okay. So as he was shifting gears is when he blew it.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense. Like I said, I was on Twitter trying to figure out what had happened.
It was lap one. Like I said, to start, it was just he shifted gear and that was it just that, you know, motor went.
And you know, it's super disappointing, but I wonder why there's such a disconnect between the Spire number 7 and the Spire 77 in terms of performance. Do you think maybe they're just putting all their eggs into the 7 of Corey LaJoie, because he was looking pretty okay for some of the day?
I just think Corey's a good driver. I think it's all the, behind the wheel. I think LaJoie and, you know, I just think he's the better driver, to be honest with you.
You know what? That reminded me, it's been a while since we looked at the standings. Earlier in the season, I was comparing all the new teams. Of course, Trackhouse and Daniel Suarez, 23-11, and Bubba Wallace and the number seven for Spire and Corey LaJoy. Right now, Bubba Wallace is in 20th place. We have Daniel Suarez in 23rd, and Corey LaJoy is way back in 29th place. He hasn't even cracked 100 points in the standings so far. They've been having all sorts of issues. Trackhouse in 2311, going pretty well for a brand new team, I think. We will see as the months go on how they improve or how they get worse. You guys want to jump into the Pick a Lane segment? I got two topics for us this week.
Let's do it.
All right, boys, the choose cone is out. It's time to pick a lane. Richmond running in the day for the first time in a couple years. Do you think it should be a day race or a night race, or do you think it really makes any sort of difference at all?
I'll take this one. Yeah, I think it definitely makes a difference. From everything I heard from the drivers pre-race, they were excited to run it in the day.
Yeah.
Like you said, Richmond has typically been a night race. Yeah, I think it makes a huge difference. The racing seems to be better. I mean, this isn't the first time we've seen a day race at Richmond because of rain delays and stuff in the past. You know, once that sun hits the surface, it's a hotter surface, means better racing, tire wear and all that. You have more, you know, theoretically you have more comers and goers. So, I think a lot of the drivers prefer to race, you know, in the sun as compared to a night race. So I would say keep it a day race. You know, I think there's specific races that we need to, run at night. Like I said before, I'm very biased with the Bristol night race. You know, the Coke 600 has to be run at night, things like that. But, keep it a Sunday afternoon race and race under the day and, have those hotter surfaces, wear out those tires a little bit more.
All right, Eric, how about you? Day race, night race? Doesn't matter.
I'm going to go opposite. I'm going to go night. I just think the night races, I'm biased for them a little bit. I like a good night race, especially short track. Yeah. You know, to me, I think it's a little bit easier on the crew chief setting up the car. You know, you're going to have stable conditions at night. You know, there is going to be no sun coming in one corner, not the other corner, cloud cover for 10 minutes, bright sun, 20 minutes back to cloud cover, like we saw the other day, which that caused a lot of issues for certain teams. And, you know, I agree, Matt, that causes some comers and goers, you know, as that sun and clouds move over. I love a good short track night race. The paint scheme, I'm a big paint scheme guy. And at night, those paint schemes, you know, get a little bumping and banging and bruises on them, short track racing. So I'd say keep it a night race.
I will say for me personally, though, like, I do enjoy night races for one reason and one reason only, those Saturday night races. And that's because, you can kick back a few and not have to worry about it. You know what I mean? You can really enjoy it. You can really lean into it and enjoy a Saturday night race.
That's why they are, I don't know, such like, that's why I enjoy them so much is because of those, you know, times that you could just let yourself loose. Cause on Sundays, a lot of people can't let loose cause they have work the next day. And, you know, it does add to the entertainment value of a race.
Oh, sure. Just like anything else does. A couple drinks doesn't hurt, you know? So, yeah, and it's a reason too, to get together with buddies. You know, you're more able to get out on a Saturday night with the boys, go watch a race together than you are on a Sunday afternoon. So that's, you know, personally, I like Saturday night races, but for Richmond itself, I think, you know, Sunday is a good time to run that race. And, you know, there's other tracks that can get those Saturday night races.
And here I thought you were going to say you like the aesthetic of seeing those brake rotors lighting up and glowing under the lights.
I do like that too.
But I agree. It is nice to kick back, maybe go to the bar, watch the race, talk some shit and drink some beers with your buddies. I'm looking forward to doing that with you guys real soon. I'm kind of indifferent. I don't think it really matters. I like night races. I didn't mind the day race. If they're going to keep it a day, I'd like to see them put some PJ one down, maybe see some, other lanes open up in the corners there. Other than that, either way, I could take it or leave it. It doesn't matter to me. I enjoy short track racing, even if we didn't see the greatest, race yesterday. Coming up,
dude,
this
every time. Sorry. Right. Real quick. Every time I hear somebody say the phrase short track racing anymore, all I hear in my head is Denny Hamlin making fun of Joey Logano.
Short track racing.
It's just short track racing.
That's one of my favorite clips ever.
Me too. Sorry. Go ahead.
It's just short track racing. I'm sure it doesn't have anything to do that. He was talking about Joey Logano, and we're all not fans of Joey Logano.
Yeah.
Speaking of something, one of us is not a fan of super speedways, and we have a super speedway race coming up this Sunday in Talladega. Eric, we were talking about this in our group chat a couple of weeks ago. You said you kind of lost your love for super speedway racing. Do you think there's anything that NASCAR can do to bring back your enjoyment of super speedways? I know, Matt, you enjoy them. I love super speedways. I look forward to super speedway races.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. I look forward to Dega and Daytona more than pretty much any other race on the circuit. But Eric, what's the deal, man? Why are you hating on the super speedways?
I mean, my nickname's Daytona Ron. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I love Daytona. I love the super speedways. I haven't missed a race since 14. Obviously, this year, first time, you know, I'm not going to be there, which sucks. But
yeah.
To me, the racing just changed. It just, like, I've been seeing, like, a lot more single file. And, like, I don't know. To me, other types of racing has
became more exciting.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know, road courses to me are more exciting now than the super speedways. Like, I would rather watch the road courses than watch, you know, the Talladega and, you know, the Daytona races. I just think I listen to all the drivers bitch and moan about them too. Like, I was listening to Dirty Mo. He had Tony Stewart on there, and they were talking about that. And, you know, Tony was like, as an owner, and you know, Dale was talking about it too, like, you know, you're losing money.
Oh yeah.
So like, it's hard
no matter what, you're not bringing your car home clean.
Yeah. And like, just the on track performance to me, like, I think you alluded to it when we were texting back and forth, like, once that big one happened early,
yeah,
like, then everyone's like, whoa. Cause like, I think I was saying, like, man, these guys are getting aggressive. They're getting aggressive. And I was loving the racing. When it gets like that, it's, you know, it is, but like, once one thing happens, boom, they're up next to the wall and they're going around. And you were there, Whitey, like, it's like, come on. And they're just going around and around and around. And, you know, you get that. And, you know, I just think there's certain races. I don't hate them. Like, I love watching them. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm always going to watch them and they're always going to be exciting. But as far as what the
you
schedule is,
you look forward
done,
to other tracks is, on the schedule.
Yeah. And it might do to the fact that I've been going to Daytona and I'm just so used to it as it just became another track to me. Like,
it's
people
weird.
Go to that race. Like, that's,
it's weird to say, like, Daytona 500 might not be as special to you because you've been there so many times, you know?
Yeah, it lost its thing for me, you know?
I can agree with that because, like I said earlier in the show, it was the first time I ever went to a race was at Daytona for the 500. So, like, I saw the spectacle. I saw it all. And, like, that was my first introduction to it. So
and
then you
don't
go
get me wrong. Taking you there and like bringing, I brought a couple other people, you know, and like that is still an exciting race for me.
Yeah.
But you've noticed.
But even my second time, I was like, so my second time going, I'm like, oh, well, yeah, it's just another race though. Like, it's the Daytona 500, but it's not like that mecca event that, like, I mean, sure, like, fans that have been watching for 40 years probably haven't gone. So I think I'm a little spoiled there too. So I could see you saying, like, oh, you know, kind of loses that specialness. That's why I'm excited. Maybe not this year, but maybe next year. I want to go to that cutoff race at Daytona. I think under the lights, it'll add a different element to it. And those guys will be aggressive. Now, the problem is with super speedways, and I completely understand it, is sometimes they get too aggressive. And that big one happens too early. Happened this year at Daytona. Lap 14 took out pretty much more than half the field. So I could see the sour taste for that, too. It kind of put a sour taste in my mouth also. I'm hoping this weekend we get a lot of long green flag stretches that kind of renew my faith a little bit in the super speedway race that was kind of tarnished with Daytona 2021.
I love it. I love super speedway racing so much.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it harkens me back to a day where
it's
like
just something I think when I was different.
I think when I was a kid and you know, I was growing up and my dad would be watching a race like he does every Sunday for my entire life. And the races that really sucked me in would be those super speedways and just the speed that they're going at as close like together crazy. As they're going. I think it also helped me too, being a junior fan. You know, that was always, you know, those were always the four races every year that like Dale had a legit actual like shot at winning.
Yeah.
And he was the favorite at most of those tracks too. You know, the Pied Piper Junior was called. So I just think I have such a fond memory, I guess you could say, of super speedways. And every time one rolls through on the calendar, I get so excited. Like this week, I'm so excited for Talladega. And I get where you guys are coming from, where like it does get single file for a majority of those races.
I feel like that just started a couple of years ago at Talladega too. It was kind of like a team order thing where they noticed the Fords were working together and working together well. And then Chevy kind of jumped on that train, and then it becomes like a freight train where it could get a little boring.
Where I lost it. I think that's where I lost it. Like I said, yes, I've been going to Daytona, and the 500 to me has just become another race for me going so often.
Yeah.
But I think going to the race and being as excited as I always was to go there and then watch the four cars, which would be my team and my teammates, ride around and back for the first 80 to 100 laps of the race just because they're trying to play it safe. Understand, you can call it strategy, but in my eyes, I hated that. I wanted my driver up there battling all day long, because that's where, like Matt is saying, Junior is always up front. So you're always invested. He's always in it. Me, it's like I'm watching my driver ride around for, you know, don't get me wrong, I love watching Junior do that and that action. Sure. But, you know, you still have a driver, and it's like watching my guy.
Yeah.
And like once that whole team thing, and Gibbs started that back then of like, hey, let's work together. Let's move up. Let's go as a group of four. And everything we do, you're going to do. Like it ruined it a little bit for me, you know?
You know what?
Let your guy be aggressive. Let your guy be aggressive and go for it. Let him do what he wants to do. Like,
I'm sorry, Whitey, we keep cutting.
I was just
gonna say really quick, I think the stage racing helps a lot too, because you get those at the end of stage one and at the end of stage two, right in the middle of the
race.
They
really start pushing for those points.
Ramping it up, and you get excitement for, you know, they wait, you know, okay, they're going to go, and you'll hear the announcers, you know, Gordon and Boyer or Jeff Burton and Dale Jr. say, you know, they're going to wait until two or three to go. And then it almost becomes a, well, when are they going to do it? Are they going to do it this lap? Are they going to jump out of line this lap? Are they going to try to form that top or bottom line now? And it kind of becomes that anticipation kind of starts ramping up, you know, 10, 15 laps left in the stages and then the race. And I think that's what gets me going too. So I don't know. I have a special place, like I said, in my heart for it.
I just think more drivers are less inclined to bump out of line and follow somebody.
Yeah. Though.
Like I'm waiting for them to bump out of line and follow, but only certain drivers will get in a line and follow somebody. And Kenseth was always one to, he'd bop out. Someone come with me, come back in.
Yeah.
Go back out. Hey, someone come with me. Like, and no one would ever want to go with him. I'm like, he's aggressive. He wants to be aggressive. But then you get like I said, that Dale Jr. was talking to Tony Stewart, and Tony was saying, you know, him and Bobby Labonte, they wanted to work together, but they didn't see the race the same.
They
couldn't, his move when he wanted, Bobby Labonte didn't want to do that.
Wasn't
so they
ready.
Didn't want to work as teammates. But you know who he did work with was Dale Jr. Because Dale and him saw the racetrack the way they wanted to, and like they were always going with one. So Tony, if Dale jumped out, Tony was going to jump no matter what. He was going to, because he had full confidence that that is the move that Tony was going to do.
Yeah.
And I just think that many drivers are in sync. Or let's just say this. I think, let's, for instance, you take a Martin Truex Jr. And Denny Hamlin. Let's say they're up there running, they're teammates. Gibbs wants them to run well together. But let's say Hamlin loves drafting with Alex Bowman.
Yeah.
But he's not a teammate.
Well, like Clint Boyer back in the day. Clint Boyer loved to push anybody he could.
Right. So like you're as an owner, you're kind of telling your driver, hey, don't work with that guy. When that might be the best guy to get you to the front. And like, I just think a lot of that is happening. It's this manufacturer, you know, like you touched on earlier, Matt, that, you know, that points battle and that, you know, bragging rights. So even if your best friend drives a Chevy and you're in a Ford and you know you could work well together in a plate race, you're told not to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's up to the driver to make a decision. Now, come to the end of the race, it is a free-for-all. But for most of that race, I understand some teams working together, but I think it hurts other drivers that might work well with a different team and just not the same manufacturer.
So we're getting a little long in the tooth here. We're getting close to the end of the show.
Jennifer Joe Cobb. So I just
want to make like three quick points. One, what if the Cup Series, like Xfinity Series racing, you can't lock bumpers in the Xfinity Series at super speedways. What if Cup implemented something like that? Do you think that would either kind of cut down on some of the long trains we see where guys would try to push a little bit harder?
You can't lock.
What's that?
You can't lock, but for only like a few seconds. Like, I think you could touch bumpers for a little bit, but then you got to back off. I think they used to not allow it at all. And then they did bring it back a little bit. Yeah. Like, you're allowed to lock, but only for so long, I think. Matt, do you know how, like...
I know in the Xfinity Series, they'll call... In the Truck and Xfinity Series, you cannot do it. But I know in the Cup Series, I'm pretty sure in the Cup Series, it's all whatever you do goes.
I think Cup is... It's like free reign when it comes to locking bumpers.
So what if
they did something where, like, okay, you can't lock bumpers now. Do you think that would kind of cut down on the freight train a little bit? Maybe even see like a tandem drafting come back in a way. I always thought tandem drafting looked a little silly, but it was kind of fun to watch.
It's possible. I mean, you're asking the wrong guy. I like it. I love it too.
I
still call it plate racing, but plate racing.
I just get upset when they get a little over aggressive in the beginning and wreck the field like they did at the Daytona 500 this year. And I think, Eric, I was going to say, I think he got gypped in 2020 because, of course, well, this past year, huge wreck early on, and then everyone was afraid to make moves. It was a freight train late in the night in Daytona until the last couple laps of the stage. And, of course, we saw that big fiery wreck at the end. 2020, we had a rain delay. It started out great. Then we had a rain delay. And then, again, like you said, you're an Eric Jones fan, and he was at Gibbs at the time. Those guys are staying back in the back of the pack for a lot of that race. And it was already a late race start on a Monday. We had a flight to catch. So I think we didn't really get to enjoy the 2020 Daytona 500 racing on the track as much as we could have. And even my guy Tyler Reddick and Austin Dillon, they were kind of hanging out in the back. Reddick kept pulling out a line, trying to make some moves, but he was a rookie at the time. No one wanted to follow him, which is understandable. You have to kind of prove yourself at that point. So I think maybe we got burned the last couple of years in Daytona.
I could be a little upset that I didn't make the race this year too. I could be a little salty about it. And we didn't see
the greatest Daytona 500s in the last 2 years, but I have high hopes for this weekend in Talladega. Of course, we are going down to Talladega, Alabama for the Geico 400 and 188 laps. For 500 miles, it all goes down 2 p.m. on Fox. Your top 10, according to Bob Pockris's math. Now, this could change. This is not official. But unofficially, your starting row is going to be Denny Hamlin and Joey Logano. Row number 2, Martin Truex Jr. and William Byron. Row 3, Bowman and Bell. Row 4, Blaney and Elliott. And rounding out the top 10, going to be Kyle Busch and Brad Keselowski. All those guys, very competent super speedway racers. And you guys want to jump into your picks for a refresher of last week. I chose Austin Dillon. He got me 30 points. Matt chose Denny Hamlin. He got 55 points. And Eric chose Kyle Busch. He got 33. So I will be picking last. Matt, you will pick first. Who are you going to pick in Talladega this week?
Well, I'll give you guys the stats from the last four races like I usually do. Not that it really matters at a place like Talladega.
I need them because I just realized I didn't write down my pick at all. I don't know who I'm going to go with.
You can close your eyes and just pick a name and you have as good a shot as anyone.
Jennifer Joe Cobb.
So, well, you lost already. So this, and this first stat here that I'm going to give you guys proves my point as to it's a crapshoot. So my first stat that I always give is the average finishes inside the top 10 from the last four races at Talladega.
Yeah.
And that list includes Ryan Newman. Ryan Newman is it. That's the list. At a 9.8, barely finishing.
He's the only one with a top 10 average finish.
He's the only one with an average finish inside the top 10 in the last four races at Talladega.
I'm not surprised by that. He is a great plate racer. So
what that shows you is that you don't really know what's going to happen. And then laps led Joey Logano with 131, Blaney with 112, and then Chase Elliott with 108. All three of those guys are pretty good at plate races. The wins, Blaney has two of them, and then Denny and Chase have one apiece in the last four. And then since I'm going first, I'll dive right into it. I don't know. I won this week with Denny. I'm going to stick with Denny and try to win again with him.
I think it's a solid pick. I don't blame you at all for that one. That would be my go-to pick for any super speedway. Solid pick.
He's the New Deal Junior as far as the probably the favorite every time we go to a super speedway. But even with that being said, it doesn't mean anything because the big one's always out there waiting.
Yeah. Again, if you're betting this week, I mean, it is so hard to pick a winner in NASCAR in general, let alone at a super speedway. If anything, I would take our picks with a grain of salt. And if you're going to bet them on your daily fantasy lineup or bet them to get a top 10, maybe a top three if you want a little bit extra money.
Well, since I'm second, I'm going to go with, you know, it's one of those races where I would love to go with one of those guys. I really had my heart set on Brad Keselowski. I feel like he is a very, very good plate racer.
And yeah,
I feel like he sees, you know, that air like some of those guys back in the day used to. And, you know, he's just not having the same luck that he's been having this year. And
yeah,
I really wanted to go with him, but I'm going with the long shot guy. I think something's going to happen up front. Like we were saying, the aggressiveness, and I'm going with, someone that only I think has a fair shot at these tracks. And his name is Ricky Stenhouse Jr.
Okay. As a good long shot bet. Of course, he's won at super speedways before, summertime in Daytona. And you want to know what? He always shows a lot of speed in Daytona and Talladega. Last year, I'm pretty sure he finished in the top 10 last year in the June race. And
I just figured he's aggressive.
Yeah.
Let's get my love for it back. So I'm going to follow him throughout the race because he likes to be one of those drivers mixing it up front and trying to stay out there and lead that race.
Yeah. He's having a clean season too. I'll tell you what, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Ricky pulled it off this weekend.
Could you imagine the outrage if Ricky Stenhouse Jr. made it into the playoffs and one of the guys from last year didn't? Who knows? Maybe Chase goes on a dry run and he doesn't get in, but Ricky Stenhouse Jr. does. I don't want to jinx you. I'm sorry. I shouldn't even said anything. Like you alluded to, Eric, Brad Keselowski, good quality plate racer. Joey Logano, same. I was leaning towards Team Penske, maybe Blaney. He won last year in June. I don't know. Those Penske guys, they are so aggressive. And usually they throw some bad blocks and wreck the field. And whether they make it through that, I don't know. This is really tough. You guys left some good guys out there.
Pick Newman.
I'm not going to pick Newman.
Pick Newman.
I would definitely play Newman in my daily fantasy lineup. I'm sure he'll be pretty affordable in a DraftKings lineup.
This is such a Whitey moment right now. Like he is like sweating bullets.
I
pick Newman.
Oh man, I can't believe Born I forgot to make a pick. I'm going to go with
Ryan Newman.
I picked Austin Dillon last week. I don't want to pick him again this week, but I think he might do well at Talladega.
Whitey, we have to go to bed soon. Let's.
I know. I'm gonna go with. I'm gonna go
Why don't you wait till the race ends to pick someone?
Where's Joey Logano starting? Joey Logano starting on the front row. I hate to do it. I'm picking Logano to win in Talladega. My heart is with one of the RCR drivers. Oh, yeah.
You blew it.
Ooh, you should have picked
Sweeney. I'm saying Matt DiBenedetto. I'm going to say Matt DiBenedetto gets the 100 win for the Wood Brothers. Wow. And his first Cup Series win in Talladega. The Penske drivers are good. He's in a somewhat Penske affiliated ride. I think he is going to bring the 21 home in victory lane and win his way.
Why didn't you just do that to begin with?
He's going
to
win his way into the playoffs this weekend in Talladega. Just to recap, your playoff picture, we're 9 races in. We have 8 different winners: Michael McDowell, Christopher Bell, William Byron, Kyle Larson. Martin Truex Jr. has 2 wins on the board. Young Ryan Blaney, Joey Logano, and Bowman. Could Denny, could Ricky, or could Matty D get their first win of the season in Talladega? You'll have to tune in this Sunday. Geico 500, 180 laps for 500 miles, 2 p.m. on Fox. And don't forget Saturday Xfinity Series on Fox at 4 p.m. We'll break it all down Monday night right here. For Matt, the Statman Riley, for Daytona Ron, I'm Michael D. White for the Bump and Run podcast, and we'll talk to you next week. Have a good night.